Welcome to Home on the Res, a podcast series that looks at housing on First Nations from every direction. I'm Mick Favel.
And I'm Jennifer Francis. We're both graduates of the Indigenous Communication Arts INCA program at the First Nations University of Canada, and we're happy to be your hosts of Home on the Res.
This is the third season of Home on the Res.
We've covered everything from building design to global warming to heat recovery ventilation to our episode today on rent.
Wait a minute. I was with you up until the rent episode. What does paying rent have to do with First Nations housing?
I know that if you talk about charging rent, you won't be chief anymore.
Don't you know that free housing was guaranteed in the treaties?
That's what I thought. But when I looked into it, I couldn't find anything in our Treaty 4 about free rent.
But everyone knows housing is a treaty right.
Not everyone. Our Home on the Res reporter, Lori Dietz, found at least two people who have a different take on who should be paying for housing on reserves.
I bet neither one of them is a chief.
You're right about that, but rent isn't necessarily a bad thing if it leads to better housing. Lori's research started with Roxanne Harper.
Roxanne is a Mi'kmaq from Elground First Nation in New Brunswick. She's been working in housing for over 30 years.
She started as a property manager, then she worked for the federal government, and then she started Turtle Island Associates, which helps First Nations develop capacity to manage housing.
Some people believe that housing is a treaty right, and therefore they don't need to pay rent. So do you know where this originated, how this originated?
I think it stems from the fact that we don't necessarily understand the relationship that the First Nation is entering into. And I mean, I'm certainly not a lawyer or a treaty rights expert, but I would agree with you, Lori, that I have yet to see evidence that housing is a treaty right. There are often references to shelter in treaties, but that doesn't necessarily translate into a free house for every First Nations person in the country. If it did, we probably wouldn't have to have a conversation like this if we could prove that, in fact, there was an obligation on behalf of the Canadian government. However, we have many thousands of homes across, you know, Turtle Island that belong to First Nations. Thousands of our people are living in these homes. And I would rather put my energy into what are the responsibilities that we have to protect both people and property.
So give us some understanding as to why some members in a community or whole communities do not charge rent for their housing.
Our communities tended to become landlords in the early 70s with the introduction of federal government programs, where they seen an opportunity to improve living conditions. But by seeing that opportunity also meant that our communities were taking on debt by borrowing this money from the federal government. What we were not understanding, in my opinion, at that time, is that First Nations were becoming landlords. They were becoming the owner of the property, and they were having to develop a new relationship between the First Nation and the occupant. That relationship, as it's known off reserve, is a landlord-tenant relationship. We really didn't do business like that on reserve until we started using these federal government programs and borrowing money. But when the First Nations began taking on the debt, they quickly realized that it was not economically sustainable, and it started to pose problems in terms of the owner being the First Nation, not having sufficient funds to cover all of the operating expenses. It's not a concept that's really originated with our people, and it tends to be looked at as a community issue, but in fact, it is a responsibility of both the community and the individual occupants, or at least that's the concept we've been promoting for 30 plus years.
Tell us about the financial situation of a community that charges rent as opposed to one that does not charge rent.
I think the first thing I would say is, of course, the financial situation is better, but it really goes beyond that. You know, the fact that we're working with a First Nation community who has an established history and a pattern of expecting the occupant to contribute toward the cost of their own housing solution, we also tend to see a community that has a portfolio that is maintained either at minimum standard or above minimum standard because the landlords are taking the rental revenues and reinvesting it into covering operating costs. So they're able to do the maintenance and repairs on the home. What that often translates into is healthier housing for the occupants and their family, but also happier occupants, people who feel that they are in fact contributing to their own community and they want to be a part of that success. So I think it's really important that people start to understand that housing in fact is subsidized. And when we've been having these conversations with First Nations that it's a subsidized approach, we actually find it helps selling the concept of charging and collecting rent a little bit easier. And I think it's because the band member now understands that they're not in this alone, but that in fact their community is standing behind them all the way. And I think it promotes a relationship between the landlord and the individual band member that is a strong relationship.
You've said this more than once, that charging and collecting rents is one option. What are some of the other options out there?
Well, I mean, the other options, of course, too, are looking at charging for essential services. We could be looking at implementing maintenance fees. So more and more communities will start moving toward implementing, you know, as a minimum, recovering tenant damage or neglect, looking at recovering essential services and other operating costs. So some bands will call that rent and other bands are reluctant to use the word rent. I have one client right now who they call it a community service fee. And I think that's a wonderful name because really, when you pay your rent on reserve, you're contributing to your community. I suspect that our great grandparents didn't need to sign legal contracts because our teachings were so strong that we understood each other's roles in the community. But I think today, modern day times, a contract can only benefit the First Nation who's the landlord and the band member who's the tenant by helping both parties understand and accept their responsibilities. And the end result really is adequate, suitable, affordable housing. Which, how can we argue with that? That's a win-win for both the community and the band member.
So where do you see the future in terms of First Nations charging rent?
I actually believe, and I have to believe it, that we will get to a point where First Nations people are proud to go and pay their rent, and they will walk with confidence knowing that they have contributed to their own community. And they will feel proud about that. They will look around their community and they will see adequate, suitable housing and know that they've been a part of that solution. And I think, you know, every decision we make today affects tomorrow. So while we're out paying our rent today, we're paving the way for future generations to have safe housing. And isn't that what we all want? It's really on us to make sure we take the time to educate and communicate, to sit down with our people and explain to them that housing is in fact a multi-million dollar business, to explain to them that the homes that we're building today need to shelter future generations, and that we have a responsibility to do that.
Well, that was inspiring.
Really educational. But that's all theory. What's it like on the ground?
For that, Lori talked to Derek Cameron.
Derek is the Director of Public Works and Housing for the Beardies and Okemoses Cree Nation in Saskatchewan.
In the last 3 years, Beardies has implemented a plan to build new band houses so more of their young people can move home.
I'm all ears.
Start by telling us about the current housing situation in Beardies and Okemoses.
We're turning over a new leaf in our community with a universal shelter regime. It is key, I guess, for our First Nation to survive and meet the demands of housing and renovations in our community. You don't like talking about rent on a First Nation. You don't like talking about taxes on a First Nation. So trying to be creative, thinking outside the box was key. Band-based capital is a fund that is made available to the First Nation on every fiscal year. Band-based capital funds your housing program, your maintenance program. For our community, Beardies and Okemoses Cree Nation, we've always taken a deficit in our BBC because of lack of funds. By the time we do the budget, we realize that we're only able to do 5 major renovations every year. You know, when at the end of the day, we realize that there's just not enough funds there. And CMHC allows us and opens that door for us. You have to meet certain criteria to be awarded a CMHC unit, your First Nation has to qualify for a Minister Loan Guarantee. Your audit has to be in July 31st of every year. We need to realize that this First Nation has potential. And the first and foremost is making sure that our housing is adequate and safe for our community members to reside in. Over the next 5 years, this First Nation will require $4.5 million to fully renovate 244 units that need to be renovated. So $4.5 million, where do we get it from? We bought on the Universal Shelter Regime as a pilot project with ISC, and what it'll generate within the next 5 years is in excess of $6 million for this First Nation. So that'll give us all the funds that we require to renovate every unit that we have in this First Nation. After 5 years, now you're realizing a surplus in your Universal Shelter Regime. It now gives you that flexibility. Instead of only building CMHC units, you're also building BAN units.
Was it difficult to get the community to get on board with paying rent?
I guess what was key for us was the community consultation that we did. We did on-reserve community consultations once a month. And by the time we hit our fourth consultation meeting in the city of Saskatoon, and we had 75 people in attendance. And all these people want to come home. There are young people. They're going to university. They're working in a city. But they'd rather be at home in Beardies, traveling back and forth to the city to go to school or to go to work. And they're saying, I would gladly pay $100 a month rent on a First Nation. I would trade anybody on a First Nation that doesn't want to pay rent. So the young people are putting pressure on people occupying these units in the community. And that cry is being heard. They're my strongest advocates are the young people. They realize and they see what we're trying to do. The elders see what we're trying to do.
How is the amount of rent to be paid determined?
ISC wanted us to start at $345 based on the CMHC formula. I said, no, we want to take a small bite. You don't want to take a big bite and kill the program right off the hop. You do a gradual increase year after year. So we set the rate at $100. Everybody can live with that. And it generates enough revenue for the First Nation to allow us to move forward, to have this program succeed.
What would you suggest to other communities who want to charge rent and take the same path as Beardies and Okemeses?
Making sure that you have a sound housing policy in place. You have your tenancy agreements in place. Do your community consultations once a month. That's key and vital to the success of any program in the First Nation. ISC will provide funding for that to allow you to develop the housing policy, the tenancy agreement, but also provide you funds to hold your community consultations. The whole process for us took us 1 year, and the last key component to our tenancy agreement was not charging rent to our elders, 65 and older, not charging rent. And I said, this program is not going to work if you don't allow us to include this, because in our culture, we don't take our elders and burden them with financial responsibility. That is us as a community to look after them. That is one of our customary laws in any First Nation, is you look after your old people.
Thank you so much, Jared.
Okay, that way. And last come, then again, watch them, make rich. Hi.
So by charging just $100 a month and increasing it to $300 after 5 years, Beardies is now able to finance new BAN homes.
So are we convinced? Is it worth it for leaders to try to convince their citizens that housing isn't a treaty right?
Now that I understand the issues better, I can see that housing isn't just the responsibility of the band, it's a responsibility for the individuals too.
And it's a pride thing too. I want to contribute to the future of my community, and I want my kids and grandkids to have safe, adequate housing.
Do you think you'll move back to Kuakatu someday?
If there's a house for me, I'd love to go home.
And if you move back when you're 65, you wouldn't have to pay rent.
That's right, and I could run for chief.
For Home on the Res, I'm Jennifer Francis with future chief Mick Favel.
Thanks for listening to Home on the Res.
You can hear all of our Home on the Res episodes on the Indigenous radio networks across Canada.
And if you want to hear them again, you can find them at fnnboa.ca.
Bye for now.
Stay safe, everyone.